Welcome to the Fansmanship.com podcast, coming to you from San Luis Obispo, California.
Welcome to the Fansmanship.com podcast, here in preparation for the Cal Poly baseball season with Cal Poly head baseball coach Larry Lee. Coach Lee, how's it going?
Very good, Owen. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks for coming on again. We spoke a couple of years ago, and certainly a lot's changed, and the program's had a lot of success since then with a couple of, I think, 40-plus win seasons. But I want to talk about last year a little bit and then kind of get into this year's team. I know it's a new year and a new focus for you, I'm sure, but really probably informed by how well the team played last year and hosting the first regional and everything that happened a year ago. You're a San Luis Obispo guy, and we've talked about that before. And I think I asked you this question the day you lost the last game of the regional, but maybe the answer is a little bit different now with some perspective. What really did it mean to you to host San Luis Obispo's and Cal Poly's first regional last season, both, you know, personally and as a program?
Well, it was a great thing for the program, great thing for the community. The one thing I kind of look back on and I felt it while we were playing in the regional was just the amount of energy and electricity in the crowd. I mean, we got about 3,200 fans for each of our four games, and with each progressive game and each progressive inning as the game went on, it got louder and louder, and it was great. I mean, I hadn't ever really seen anything like that in San Luis Obispo growing up here, and it was good. So there's a lot of I think pride in the community, and it's very unique out on the West Coast. There's not too many baseball programs that draw fans very well, and we do. And it's something that the community looks forward to each and every baseball season. But to host the regional was great, and obviously it was disappointing in the way it ended. But that's the one thing I look back on, and it was pretty neat thing to be associated with.
Yeah. I don't know if it was the seventh or eighth inning of that last game when you guys, you know, came back and tied it up. But like you said, every at bat of that inning, to me, you know, as somebody who, you know, is around a lot of Cal Poly sports, you know, you don't really see that often, where there were probably fans that went home from that game just jazzed, whether you guys won it or lost it. I feel like, you know, just based on that inning and that excitement, you know, you can play 100 baseball games and not have that kind of an inning and that kind of an atmosphere and electricity.
Yeah, you know, we got down 5-0. We gave up 5 in the second, and then battled back. We scored 1-1-1, and that inning we scored 2, and that was the bottom of the eighth, and actually lined out with a runner in scoring position to end that inning. But you know, the fans really stayed in it the entire time, and it's good, and it means a lot. And you know, going into the regionals, we were 27-3 at home, and that's a disappointing part of the season, is that we created the you know, great circumstances and opportunities for us to play at home where we were so good, and just didn't get it done, and that was the I knew as we were playing, and as soon as after that final game, I knew it would kind of sink in a couple weeks later, and it did. That you know, we kind of had our opportunity to do some special things and get to the next round, and really didn't take care of it.
Got it. So after that regional is over, I mean, it's a ton of work for everybody around Cal Poly. It's, you know, it's intensity for the better part of a week there, and then the off season is here, probably quicker than you want it to be. Is there ever time off, and did you take some time off right then, and what did you do this off season to kind of recharge from something like that? I would imagine, as you know, as being in the center of everything, maybe it's kind of draining at the end of the year. You kind of take a look and say, man, I need to take a rest and recharge. What do you do in the off season to recharge?
Well, the problem is that the recruiting starts right away. So the heavy recruiting starts about June 1st, and it runs for us about 2.5 months, probably till mid-August.
And that's for like the summer ball that kids play and so forth?
Yeah, because Well, recruiting is really year-round, but those are your heavy months. Those are when you're out quite a bit. Teddy and Tom, you know, my two assistants, they do the majority of the recruiting. I get out, but there's really no downtime. And the only saving grace is that we're a quarter school. And so probably late in August, early September, there's about 3 weeks where you can kind of recharge your batteries and kind of prepare for the next year. But really just the nature of the sport and the recruiting doesn't really let you to take a lot of time off. And, you know, our time off, you know, my kids are already in school, so you can't do a lot. And so just the nature of the sport and recruiting's a very big aspect of being successful. And you're recruiting kids earlier and earlier, whereas when I first started, you know, you were looking at kids their senior year in high school or junior college kids, and now you're looking at sophomores and juniors in high school, and you're committing those players earlier and earlier. So you have to get out, you have to identify them, have to get them on campus. And, you know, we hold a lot of one-day camps and then, you know, 2 or 3 day prospect camps, and now the majority of players that we have in our program have been to our camp. So just gives us a much better idea of what their makeup is, what their ability to adjust, and how they take instruction. And so it's year round, but as long as you love what you're doing, then it's not really work.
Sure. Just the baseball recruiting process to me is just like I can't even fathom trying to figure out who's going to get drafted and who to, and with so few scholarships that baseball has and divvying them up. I mean, you have to be an accountant to figure it all out. And on some level, I was in the airport this last year at LAX right after, I think there was a perfect game or some kind of showcase that happened down in San Diego, and there were a couple kids with, you know, all the perfect game gear that they had on or whatever, and I was talking to them about it. You know, I just kind of, you know, how does this work for you guys? And there were pitchers from the Northeast, and one of them was recruited to, you know, committed to Virginia or something. But that was, you know, given that he might not be drafted. And I'm thinking, man, if I'm the Virginia coach, I'm counting on X, Y, and Z to happen. And when X, Y, and Z doesn't necessarily happen, you got to have backup plan 1, 2, and 3. I know you guys had a commit or a reported commit who got drafted last year too. That's got to be something that you have to have. I mean, like 2 or 3 backup plans on some level, or at least try to, right?
Well, yeah. I mean, it's really difficult because you don't know, one, the players in your own program wants to become draft eligible either as redshirt sophomores or juniors. You know, maybe in our eyes as coaches, you don't think that, you know, they're a pro guy yet, and all of a sudden they have good years, and you see all the questionnaires that they're receiving from pro teams, and where you thought somebody was kind of hands off for another year, you know, they're gone. So and that happens quite often, and the high school kid too. I mean, we've committed kids that you know, they're 86 to 88, and then, you know, in the summer before their senior year, and then all of a sudden towards the end of their senior year, they're 92, 93, they get drafted, they sign, and so you just, it's just part of the process. You have to have, you know, backup plans, but it's hard to really over recruit. You said that you're limited in scholarships. So in baseball, you have a 35-man roster. You can have 27 of your players on scholarship, and you have 11.7 full scholarships to hand out. So unlike a football or
11.7,
yeah, out of the 35.
How do they come up with that number? I mean,
it's crazy. Yeah, it's a what happened is it's a balance. It's a gender equity rule.
Got it. And that makes sense.
Football skews the numbers. You know, at the Division I level for football, I think they have 85 scholarships. At the subdivision, they have 65, and right. So you have to even it out. So baseball is always kind of, you know, got hammered on that aspect. So, you know, there's very, very few, like, full scholarships across the country in baseball. It's more, you know, 25%, 50%, 40% of whatever a full scholarship's books, tuition, room and board. So, Yeah, you have to be creative, and you have to get the right type of player, and your mistakes are magnified when you only have 11.7 scholarships to deal with, and you want to try to make sure that you're getting a player with some skills, good makeup, good work ethic, and is a kid that's going to develop within your program.
Yeah, I see at Cal Poly here, I see you and other coaches at other teams' games all the time. I see Tim at the women's basketball games. I see you and Joe at the football games. I see everybody seems like they really support everybody else. And I wanted to ask you about that because I think I've asked a few coaches about it. But is there something specific like by design culturally that Cal Poly does, or is that just something that kind of has developed over time, or is that something that's just a sign of like a healthy athletics department maybe?
Yeah, I think it's a healthy athletics department. For me, I just like watching quality athletics, whatever the sport is, and I try to go to as many football and basketball games as possible. Sometimes the sports I can't go to are the sports that are spring sports.
Sure.
I mean, it's just physically impossible. But try to one show my support to the coach and the program. Two, I think it's the best possible environment for my kids. I mean, that's how I grew up. I came, watched a lot of different sporting events growing up because my dad and
probably in Mott and yeah. In San Luis, right? Watched Cal Poly games.
Yeah,
and stuff, right?
always sneaking into football and basketball games and
back when it was a little easier.
The security is a little tougher nowadays. Too many cameras. So, but I just think it's. A great environment for my kids to go to. We try to make sure our baseball players attend as many sporting events as possible. It's just a sign of we have your back. I mean, I try to go to as many of Tim's football games, and probably this year made it to about four, and I just stand on the sidelines and by the end zone and watch and have courtside seats this year for basketball games, and have seen Joe's teams.
Do you talk to those coaches very often? Do you like get like tidbits? I hear you guys on like coaches shows from time to time, like together randomly. You are kind of over here at the baseball field, your office, so maybe it's not super conducive to that.
Yeah, that's the problem. I mean, we're on Gilligan's Island out here, and I don't get a chance to interact with those guys. And there was a time where like Hugh Breen was our women's tennis coach, and I would run into Tim and Mott, and I would pick his brain a little bit on the mental side of tennis, because I always thought that even though they say golf is the most mental sport, I always had an opinion that I thought tennis was, and for certain reasons that I saw. And
baseball kind of is too.
Baseball is very much so, and it's what separates the the good from the great, and the good from the average. And so I would like the to interact, but we're also busy.
Yeah, sure.
with just our own teams, and
sure.
it's a year-round process now, whether it be fundraising, off-season practice, everything that you can think of that goes into a program, recruiting. So we just don't interact as much, and us being out away on the perimeter of campus, it just makes it that much more difficult.
Yeah, I want to talk about this year's team in a second and some of the players and so forth. But you mentioned fundraising, and over the past couple of years, you guys have been able to fundraise for a batting cage that's pretty great out here. You've had donations from guys like Bud Norris and Logan Schaefer, I think, is the latest one that I read. What does it mean like to you and to the program to have those guys not just be in the high-profile positions that they are in the major leagues, but also be giving back to the program as well?
Well, it's important to make sure you don't forget, where you came from and what made it possible. So, those guys, Bud and Logan, they're just now getting into where they're making a good living. Bud a little bit more so than
sure.
than Logan, but we've had Jim Newkirk, who pitched Cal Poly in the mid-60s. He's been a great supporter of us and donated a lot towards the baseball program. Robin Baggett has been involved in the Cal Poly baseball program probably for the last 30 years and has been big. So there's a number of Monty Waltz when this stadium was first built, donated quite a bit. And so that's what we're trying to do. We're trying to, you know, get past alumni, you know, baseball players involved, and you hope that your players that make it to the major league level, once they're established and making a good income, that they can, you know, kick back some money, and it really helps. And so right now we're in a big fundraising campaign to build a new locker room. So
okay.
We're probably a little bit over halfway there, and we need another big push to get us to where we can go public with this and make that last push to you know demolish this existing.
So to raise this one, tear it down and put a new one.
We'll tear it down, put another one on the site, but go two levels and then push it back towards the street behind us and forward towards the baseball field a little bit and. Just make it a nice for it's all about you know making things better for your players and little by little that's what I've tried to do since I've been here and you know we've come a long way but we still need to continue to you know reach for higher levels.
Sure. I know there was a lot of excitement when everybody brought in the big bleachers and everything else last year too, and I'm sure that's a lot bigger project and maybe more long-term kind of a thing too in terms of you know maybe eventually even making Baggett bigger. Is that even something that's out there?
Yeah. Well, that's one of the goals. We're this summer we're hoping to tear down the netting behind home plate and put up like a major league style to where it's more fan friendly and there's not poles in your sight line. We'll probably have to rent the bleachers up top for the next couple of years, but then come up with something more permanent.
Sure.
Looking into possibility of getting a new scoreboard, a video type of scoreboard similar to the what's in Mott right now. So yeah, a lot of things on the horizon, and it all makes it a better atmosphere to play in, and you know the number one thing is it'll benefit our players.
Yeah, I always chuckle when people say, "Well, they should do this like for next year or something," and I say, "Well, if you write them a check, I bet they would." That's always my refrain. Like you know, it all that stuff takes money for sure. I wanna move on to some of your players, and probably your most high profile player coming into this year is Mark Mathias. Lots of players had interesting off seasons, but Mark's was probably the most interesting. I got emails; it seemed like every day from Eric Burdick saying Mathias has another hit, Mathias has three hits, Mathias has two hits for the USA collegiate national team where he played for a lot of the summer. It seems like he had a hit like every game. How do he and Imhoff playing for Team USA over the last couple of years impact your program and what does that do for you guys profile-wise?
Well, it just kind of continues to put us on the map and you know, great honors for those two players to represent United States, and it's a great just experience. I mean, Mark went to Cuba and they played the Japanese team in the States and played a number of games, and it you know if you do well, it really takes your value.
Everybody's watching that team.
Yeah, and your stock just goes up and up and up. And so, you know, from where he started at the beginning of last season to where he finished at the end of the summer, he went from somebody that wasn't on anybody's radar to one of the better players and probably right around a second-round pick. So, unfortunately, you know, he had some arm soreness, but he played through it in the summer and then, you know, we shut him down in the fall for a large portion, and then tried to rehab his shoulder, and finally got an MRI because it wasn't getting any better, and he had a labrum tear. So he had surgery on December 2nd, and he'll we're hoping that he's ready to swing a bat but not play in the field by the TCU series.
So it's his right shoulder.
Yeah, it's his right shoulder. So hopefully he's ready to swing the bat by the TCU series, and then another month after that he's cleared to throw, and maybe hoping that we get him back at second base maybe by conference time. Maybe before, maybe a week before, we might have to put him at first base just to.
And you think he played first base some in the on Team USA as well?
Yeah, he played first, second, and third. He was one of two position players that played every game for Team USA. So,
right.
Yeah, great summer, great accomplishment, yeah. And you know, couldn't happen to a nicer kid.
It seems like kind of a double-edged sword for you, though, right? I mean, it's this thing, like you said, where he's raising his profile, and you want that for your players, probably. At the same time, you say, man, if he's got shoulder soreness, can we just shut him down and have him ready for the beginning of next? I mean, there's probably that thought in your head, but you want what's best for your guy in the end, probably, right?
Yeah, I mean, that's kind of the one instance that you just kind of go with it. And I wasn't aware that his shoulder was hurting him in the summer, but you know, if I'm in his shoes, I'm playing too. So
sure.
You're not gonna fault Mark for anything, and it's for the long run. Yeah, it's going to hurt him for a little bit, but if everything turns out all right, it'll benefit him in the long run.
Yeah. We talked a little bit about recruiting, but how does hosting a regional affect that? I mean, that has to be something you guys talk about in terms of the excitement around the program, right?
Yeah, you know, and I think this day of age with the internet, what we did last year. Maybe if this was 10 years ago, it wouldn't quite have the impact or the splash across the country. But, you know, everybody kind of knows who we are. And it used to be, you know, kids from San Diego or South Orange County really didn't know a lot about you, or Sacramento. Obviously, people outside of the state of California didn't know about you, but they know about us. And it's because of the day and age that we live in. With the access to everything, and it can't do anything but help us in the recruiting. Next year's class is one of the better classes that we've had, even though we probably committed those kids well before, the regionals. But now we're getting maybe our higher profile kid that are juniors in high school and sophomores in high school. So it just puts credibility with the Cal Poly name, and that's why we can't afford to take a step back. We need to keep on pushing the envelope and keep on trying to become that perennial regional team, and then eventually win a regional and get to a super regional, and obviously get to, you know, our ultimate goal is to, you know, to play in Omaha and play in the College World Series.
Definitely. 2 years ago when we talked, how do I put it? You didn't really seem satisfied with teams who from out of the state who might consider playing series against Cal Poly. You know, we talked about not getting calls back and things like that. You're going to Texas twice this year.
Yeah.
I was picturing maybe that you put those series back to back so you could just stay out there for a couple weeks. But you're going there, you're coming back, you're going back again. How is the scheduling situation for you now? Is it a little easier now that you guys have gone to two straight regionals? Are those conversations at least somewhat easier, or is it still kind of a tough thing for a West Coast team that's not in the Pac-12?
Well, believe it or not, it's probably worse because now the teams that weren't returning emails or returning phone calls, now they really think that we might have a chance of beating them. So again, it's a flawed system, that the RPI, and it's just the schools from those power conferences, SEC, ACC, Big 12. They really don't need to travel that much. They really don't need to play too many,
especially the SEC and the ACC.
Yeah, and they really don't need to play too many quality teams outside of conference because their conferences. Is so strong, and so that formula works. For us out in the West, we have to try to get away from the West and try to start playing uncommon opponents, you know, quality sure. opponents. So TCU and Baylor, you know, we play them. They're both quality programs. Neither of them would have a return trip, so we just took small guarantees to go out there. It's just we have to do what we have to do, and it just happens that this year, you know, it's particularly challenging because we also go to Oregon State. They will come back in the future. We've done that with them before, and they will come back probably around 2019. And then our tougher conference teams, you know, the Irvine and Fullerton and Santa Barbara, we all play at their places. You know, last year was kind of the perfect storm for us. We had a lot of home games. We had some home games against teams that we should beat, and we beat them. We had home series against some of the better conference teams, and we were able to win those series. So, yeah, I mean, it's a new season, new team, new challenges.
And not to mention, we'll have two of the three other teams who are in your regional who are back here too. You'll have Pepperdine here for a midweek game, and also Sac State is coming here, right, for a series, and they're an up and coming school as well.
Yeah,
that'll definitely be fun. I think Oregon State, are they a team that just built a brand new facility or have a renovated facility?
They've renovated, and I think they might have went to all turf with their playing surface. They had a turf infield with a grass outfield, and I'm pretty sure I just read that they have a
that'll be interesting.
Yeah, and that's what it should be because of the amount of rain that they get up there. And,
sure.
And I know Washington, they redid their whole facility, and they had the same thing. They had turf infield, grass outfield. Now it's a completely brand new stadium and surface.
Great. So that'll be fun. So you took me through the schedule a little bit. You have, like you said, you have to go on the road to face Fullerton, Santa Barbara, some of those tough teams in conference. Non-conference, along with Sac State coming in, you have
USC,
Trojans.
Grand Canyon, who they're going to be good. They just went Division I, I think, last year. They're coached by one of my ex-teammates at Pepperdine, Andy Stankwitz, played in the major leagues with the Yankees and Diamondbacks. And
now, was there a guy named Andy Stankwitz on Arizona State last year?
That was Drew Stankwitz. One of Andy's sons.
Okay,
yeah.
There you go.
So, and Andy was after his major league career, he was an assistant coach at Arizona State, and then worked in pro ball for a while, and then has been at Grand Canyon. So, again, it'll be challenging, and there's no patsies out on the West. Even the teams that are not having good years, that are not known for being a baseball power, they can very easily beat you.
Sure. So we talked about the schedule. Let's talk a little bit about players, because I think this maybe is a question that a lot of people are asking fans. Who saw last year when your guys' lineup was kind of so steady with maybe 10 or 11 position players that we ever saw very much and three or four starting pitchers, maybe three or four relievers. And that was kind of it in terms of guys who were out there and with a lot of seniors and guys who got drafted. I would imagine Bloomquist is going to be your Friday night starter. After that, is that right? And then after that, what are we looking at rotation wise for your team this year?
Bloomquist is hands down our best guy, and he had an unbelievable season last year. He went 12-2. The two losses were both losses with unearned runs. A 1-0 loss on an unearned run at Long Beach State, and the regional game, the 2-1 loss when he was up 1-0 in the seventh inning, one out, nobody on, and we had the miscommunication in the outfield. So he's back. Our one consistent back in the bullpen is Taylor Chris. He also had a phenomenal year. Didn't have a bad outing all year.
Right.
I think he gave up one earned run in conference play.
I have this image of Taylor Chris coming off in that last game.
Yeah.
After pitching, seven innings or something out of the bullpen.
The second, took us to the ninth.
Yeah, I mean, just an incredible performance from a guy. You talk about a middle reliever all year, most of the year, who was amazing. Like you said, didn't have a bad performance, and he just kind of kept going. And that's one of the enduring, along with that eighth inning, I guess, that top of the ninth and him coming off and his teammates, receiving him off the field after that, and the standing ovation he got was one of the moments of last year and what I'll remember. I know. Sorry to interrupt. He's back in the bullpen.
Yeah, he's back in the bullpen. Okay. I mean, he could be a spot starter if we wanted to, but he's too important out of the bullpen. He's one of those guys, like a Reed Riley, where if you had a lead in the seventh, you were going to one of those guys to finish the ball game, and you know, you have to play to win today and not worry about tomorrow. We have two of our starters back who are sophomores, Slater Lee and Justin Calamani. And, you know, we just started our inner squads this past weekend, so we've only seen them once, and they'll have two more outings before they pitch against Baylor. Slater's right on track. He had off-season knee surgery, so he missed the entire fall on his landing leg. And then Calamani also had knee surgery, missed the majority of the fall, and he's not quite right yet. We're hoping that, he's ready, maybe on a limited pitch count, come that first week. But we're not 100% sure. And then, a possible Tuesday starter, or if Calamani can't go, would be a walk-on freshman, Andrew Bernstein, kid okay. that is a four pitch mix guy with a plus curveball and is developing his changeup, and he's mid 80s right-hander. So those
sounds like Slater a little bit.
Yeah. Same type of version of Slater with a tighter breaking ball, better curveball. And so that, if they stay healthy, that should be our Friday through Sunday and our Tuesday starter. Then a lot, depends. Our pitching is a big question mark. Even though we've only done it last year, we really did it with Imhoff, Bloomquist, Reed, and Chris. And then that last maybe quarter of the season, Zandona and Granger kind of stepped up. Yep. And so really we did with four pitchers most of the year and then added a couple more. We would, in a perfect world, we'd like seven or nine of our guys to throw meaningful innings and have right. that trust in them. But we're still learning. We have a lot of freshmen into the mix. We're hoping Zandona can supply some quality innings for us out of the bullpen. Nick Suniga, we're hoping that he can take the next step in being consistent and getting quality hitters out. And then there's a number of outside of Bernstein, there's a number of freshmen that, we're hoping that can speed up their development. And I know two or three of those guys, we're going to have to throw them into the frying pan right away and see what they have. And so that, we're just hoping that their makeup is good and that we can battle through some early season tries.
Yeah, I stopped at lunch at the Tiki Hut here down the street this summer and saw a kid with a Cal Poly regional shirt on and asked him if he was on the baseball team. He showed me his scar on his arm. Talked to Cameron Cotton for a little bit, met him. Seems like a really nice kid, big guy. So I wanted to ask you, a kid coming back from Tommy John like that too. I know he was mentioned on the kind of preseason outlook too. I wanted to just kind of ask where he might fit in the mix too.
Well, when we committed Cameron, he was our best recruit pitching-wise out of that year. So he's a redshirt freshman this year. And, he was 88 and 90, four-pitch mixed guy. And then over the course of the summer, the velocity started going down, 83, 84, and really couldn't figure, if it was mechanics or what. And then finally got the MRI, and he had a 90% tear in his ulnar collateral ligament.
UCL, yeah.
Yeah, and he had Tommy John surgery. And he will be cleared, I think, somewhere in March. Sure. So he's on his rehab and throwing program, and he's had no setbacks. His arm looks stronger than ever. Just started throwing off a mound last week. We'll throw another bullpen this week and then add the changeup into the equation and then eventually add the breaking pitches into the equation. But yeah, we're hoping that he can get back to the form and more so than what we had in store for him. And maybe if he can get back, which is tough during the middle of the season.
I was going to say, Tommy John, you want to kind of be careful with that this year kind of thing. Are you looking at 2016 maybe?
Yeah, we're looking at this year. With the way surgeries are now, when he gets cleared, that'll be 12 months. And we've been Coach Eager designed a rehab throwing program, and he took what the doctor had given us, tweaked it a little bit, and added another month of throwing onto it. So we're actually being more cautious than a doctor would, and especially when it comes to, you know, throwing off the mound and then throwing breaking balls. So
sure.
We want to make sure we always have the, you know, the player's best interest in mind. And but we're hoping that, you know, maybe if he can come back, it'll give us a shot in the arm, and maybe we get him back at pretty close to 100% by conference time.
Yeah, that'd be great. So let's go through the lineup really quickly, because I'm picturing, you know, Van Gansen at shortstop.
Yeah.
And then, like, it's like, okay, what are we doing, you know, without Mathias? You know, we don't have Chris Hu anymore. We don't have Jimmy Allen at third anymore. You know, those are guys who you could really pencil in. I'm picturing Zach Zehner in the outfield too. And beyond that, what's our...
Well, yeah, and Van Gansen, yeah. Obviously at shortstop, he'll be, you know... He'll be a junior, and he was a starter since his freshman year.
Defensively, is he as good as you've ever had at shortstop?
Yeah, he and Mike Miller are two really, really good shortstops. And it's funny because, you know, when I was at Cuesta for 16 years, we always had great shortstops and second basemen. And then when I first got here, it took a while to get the right type of guy. We were playing guys that were really third basemen at short. And as of late, though, now we're starting to get the right type of player at that position, which is you know, needed. And, you know, Pete will anchor the infield. Ryan Drobny is a fourth-year junior. He will replace Mathias at second. John Schutnick, who has, you know, he was a high school second baseman. He's been at third base, and since he came back over the Christmas break, he's been very, very good. He had also, you know, he had to come home early from summer ball, and he had a 40% tear rotator cuff. But by the end of fall, he was throwing rockets. I mean, he has our best infield arm, and he feels great. So he's made a great recovery. And then at first, you know, probably right now, Brian Mundell. Brian's been our DH for the last couple years. Since he's come back in January, he's become a much better defensive first baseman. He's put in a lot of time to better his skills over there. Behind the plate, you know, tough to replace the Gold Glove winner of the Division I baseball, Chris Hu. And Chris, you know, you really don't, because he was my best defensive catcher that I've had, because he was a great receiver, great blocker, a leader within the pitching staff, and gave the coaching staff valuable information about hitters and about you know, what the pitcher had and what the umpire was giving you. But in saying that, Jake Lozinski has really turned out to be a very good defensive catcher and has added some offense to his game. So he has a plus arm, a pretty accurate, pretty good receiver, blocker, and he got just a little bit of experience last year, but he's a completely different player. Playing with a lot more confidence, and his skill set is very good right now. In the outfield,
just really quick on with catchers, you know, I Chris Hu last year defensively probably has always been really good, but I thought he was one of your best clutch hitters last year too, in terms of coming up in the bottom of the order and hitting, you know, bases clearing doubles and things like that when other guys in front of him maybe got pitched around, especially early in the year. Who ended up being one of your best clutch hitters too throughout the year? It was really kind of incredible all that he brought. It's really hard to replace.
He was our the first three quarters of the season, he was all of his runs batted in were meaningful. Meaning, there's guys that, you know, you're up 6-1 and they hit a 3-run home run, but his hits were down by a run, runners on second and third, base hit, and he was like that the entire year. And so he was our clutch hitter, and he and Van Gansen hitting 8 and 9 made our lineup flow, and it made it a very stressful lineup. You know, Van Gansen's on base was over 400, and I think we had three guys that were over 400, and he was one of them. I think Chris might have been another one, and so, yeah, and that's very important. So, Jake adds a little bit more pop. He's a better hitter at this time as a sophomore than, than Chris was.
Okay.
But, yeah, Chris really developed. And over the – in pro ball, Chris hit over 300, which was great. And so and Jake throws a little better. Chris always – Chris was an accurate thrower, but – When I saw Chris as a junior in high school, he already had the receiving and blocking down. We didn't have to teach him that, and it was amazing. There were games over the last 3 years that breaking ball after break ball, runner on third base in the dirt, and he rarely let a ball get by, and he was always blocking it. And that allows that pitcher to have confidence with the runner on third base. And you know, if they don't have confidence, that's when you leave the breaking ball and hang it, and it gets hit. But in the outfield, we have Ellis and Zane are returning, so Ellis will be back in center, and Zane are in right.
I forgot Ellis. Yeah. I was picturing him as a senior last year for some reason. But he's back.
Yeah, and Ellis is a fourth-year senior, and Zaner's a fifth-year senior. And then we have probably Brett Barbier in left field. He's our backup catcher. Not sure where Brett will hit. Probably lead off, possibly a little bit deeper in the order. And then Kevin Morgan and Josh George, two left-hand hitters, are starting to swing the bat, and we're trying to get them in the lineup somehow if they continue to develop.
Morgan played some left field last year, right?
Yeah.
And seems like a guy who could kind of diversify your order in terms of being a lefty.
Yeah, we don't have too many options. It probably does depend if we're facing a left or right-handed hitter. Tommy Pletschkel is in the equation to play first base. And again, if Mathias comes back and is not ready to play second base, then, we probably put him at first base for a while because he's a great defensive first baseman. And until we can eventually get him back to second, then we got to make a decision on Drobnyi and Shutnik, who plays third, or right. One's a left-handed hitter, one's a right-handed hitter. So, a lot of question marks. Defensively, we're just okay. I think last year we were very good. We'll see. We'll just see how we respond to outside competition and when the real games start, how our guys perform. But, always, if at all possible, you want to be able to pitch and play defense. Big question marks, though, on especially the pitching side of it. We really need to have some guys step up over the course of the next 2 or 3 weeks.
Yeah, make some progress. I know the last 2 years you guys had Imhoff 2 years ago kind of step into that role. But you kind of knew it coming in the offseason, and Blomqvist – Maybe you kind of had at least a little bit of a picture, maybe not for being as good as as big of a step as he made, but I remember 2 years ago when we talked, you said, this Imhoff guy, he's going to slot in on Saturday and he's going to be really good. And that's what happened. Going into this season, I know we're kind of running out of time, but going into this season, like you said, there's a lot of moving parts. But give me one or two kind of keys for you guys. Is it just pitching and defense? Is it what are some positions or maybe general things that fans can look at and say, man, this team's doing X, Y, or Z really well. That bodes well for how this season's playing out.
Well, starting pitching, I'm a firm believer in a strong bullpen, but if you don't have, and we'll see, but if your bullpen isn't quite where you need to be, then that just puts more of responsibility on your stars to go deep, puts more responsibility on your offensive players to score runs. I think early on we just need to kind of survive until we can get Mathias's bat back in the lineup. I mean, he's our best player. He's our best hitter. He if you put him hitting third, then on both sides of him, then you can be strong, and then you can probably flow right through the end of the lineup. When you take him out, then you're moving guys around, probably hitting players in parts of the lineup that shouldn't be, and then you add a lesser hitter in the lineup in his replacement. So, if I could wish for something, I would just wish that a number of pitchers would step up. I think the last 2 years, and we didn't know coming into the season, but you know, with Wagman and Imhoff, we were good on Fridays and Saturdays. Right. With Imhoff and Blomqvist, we were really good on Fridays and Saturdays. And we had Riley for both those years. Right. We had Taylor Criss for last year and probably half of Taylor Criss for the year before.
Right.
And so we've actually done it just with the bare minimum, and, you know, never comfortable. And so things just have to fall into place.
Right. So
we're hoping that, you know, Slater Lee and Calamani can take the next step up. They got plenty of experience last year. They pitched in big ball games. I think Slater, you know, his first two outings as a freshman, he two hits.
Like a rocket ship.
Yeah. He two hits Kansas State, who was a super regional the year before. He two hits UCLA, shuts him out. But then, you know, he pitched at Seattle, and it rained from the first inning all the way through, and the mound was the only dirt portion of the field, and kind of re-aggravated his knee. And looking back, you know, that was his landing knee. And after that, he really never had what he had in those first two games.
Yeah, he was kind of never right after that.
No, he just couldn't get out front didn't have the spin on his breaking ball, didn't have the fastball command, and didn't have the command of his changeup. So now, he's one outing into it. He's got two more outings for the regular season. He has great makeup, so that'll never be an issue. He's a confident kid. But for him, you know, he's not that 92, 93 guy. He's that 85, 88 guy, and he really has to mix. And with Calamani, we're just hoping that we can get him healthy and become a dominant quality starter. And then with Bernstein, I really like what he brings to the table stuff-wise. Now we just need to make sure he's mentally ready and go from there. And then Taylor Criss, you know, we don't need him to be better than last year, just need to be the same. And now the key is to try to get maybe three or four other guys, a Kyle Smith, who's our only lefty outside of Criss in our program, and then maybe two other freshman arms, Eric Ullman, kind of a sidearm guy out of Las Vegas. We're just trying to see what guys can be successful at this level and what guys can handle it mentally right out of the bat as a freshman. And one good thing about the program is that our upperclassmen take care of our freshmen. They're very hands-on. They're great leaders of the program. They show them how to practice, how to lift. They try to make sure that they're helping them with every aspect of the game once they're here.
Got it. So piecing together that starting rotation is going to be really important this year. Yeah. Well, I know we're running out of time. I really appreciate you taking the time. We'll be keeping track as the season gets going. Alumni game coming up, right? That's the kind of the kickoff to the season?
Yeah, the Saturday before our season starts. I think it's Saturday, February 7th. And, yeah, last year we tied 2-2. I don't think I've ever lost an alumni game. We tied 2-2 and win 47 games. So maybe this year we lose it.
Sounds good to me. Yeah, thanks a lot, Coach.
Hey, thanks for listening to the Fansmanship Podcast. For more podcasts and more in-depth sports discussion, go to fansmanship.com.
Well, I've been stuck on down in Trouble Town. It's a lonely place, it's true. Street lights so bright, they blind my vision. And the people on the streets, they beat me up till I'm black and blue. You lift me up, don't bring me down. You give your love to everyone around. You send me on my way to Trouble Town. I can't find my way around Trouble Town. Ooh.
front page of